Hello, dreamers. It's Janine.
And Stephanie.
And this is the Course of Course podcast, episode 33. And we are so excited about this one. So we are here in San Diego. This is our mobile podcast studio. And we are down here because we went to the Cindy and Gary Renard workshop in La Jolla. And we have a special guest today. I want to introduce them.
Definitely. Mike Lemieux, one of our favorite authors from Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish, came down to San Diego to meet with us so we can all be together.
So Mike Lemieux, author of Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish, we're lucky to have him here. And he was with us during the Gary and Cindy Renard workshop. So, Mike, we loved your book. It was one of the most important ones that we've read. Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish? I think it's taking the world by storm. So can you give us some background on how you came up with that amazing title?
I've always wanted to write a book, and I just didn't know when it would happen or what it would be about. When I read Gary's books for the first time in 2007, I got this itch that I was going to use the material in Gary's books in some way. I didn't know in what form. 2009, I got this inspired idea one day. I was just walking. I was listening to some Metallica on my iPod, and this inspired idea came to me. He said, I should look into seeing if anyone is posting a quote of the day from Gary's books on the Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo group.
I love that Metallica was your inspiration point.
Yeah. So I researched the Yahoo group and I didn't see anybody doing that and I didn't see a history of that. So I'm like, damn it, somebody's got to do it. I'm going to do this. So I started doing it. And At the same time, I started creating these index cards at home. I would handwrite them, the quotes from Gary's books, and I would bring them to my course group and we would pass them around to begin the study group. And we'd each read one. Bruce, who we talked about yesterday, he said, Mikey, you should write a book together with all these quotes. At first, I was resistant to the idea because if I was going to write a book, I'd want it to be my own thing. And so I thought it was kind of tacky at first. And then I was like, well, you know what? I don't have anything else better to do. I can still put in my own little blurbs and my story leading me to the book. So I was like, yeah, I think I'll do that. And once I got permission from the necessary people, I went ahead and started that project and put it in print in January of 2011. At first, I thought I was going to have a title that was more spiritual sounding and serious because I still wasn't fully deprogrammed from spirituality being that it was okay to be funny. So, because everything I read on spirituality up to that point could be heavy and serious. So I still had a little bit of that deprogramming to do. One time I was visiting a friend who I'd met on Facebook in the Bay Area, Marin County, and I was telling her about the title of my book. She said, you know, that's not really your personality. You should have something a little more of you. And it occurred to me that summer, a few weeks prior to that, I had the TV on. I wasn't really watching it, but I heard this commercial that was coming on for the movie, Dude, Where's My Car? I mean, that's an old movie, but it was coming on one of the local channels, and I said, wow, that'd be an interesting title for something, and just need to change car to something. One day I was looking around for my iPod, and I found myself saying, dude, where's my iPod? It occurred to me I could use that as a book, and I just need to substitute iPod. And all of a sudden, Jesus Fish came to mind. So when my friend mentioned that I'd do something more me, that's when it occurred to me that Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish should be my title for the book. That's where that title
came. There are
so many
titles on The Course in Miracles and Amazon, and I found it because I immediately went, I got to read this book. That title hooked me because I was like, what is this guy talking about? So I thought, all right, I'll try it. And I think I read it in 24 hours, and then you read it immediately after that. Really love the book. So maybe you can talk to us and the readers a little more about how you ended up publishing this book.
I knew I wanted to self-publish it. I had an indirect connection with Hay House, but I didn't feel like my book would be a Hay House book because it felt more isolated. It wouldn't fit a big audience. It felt more for a specific small audience. So I didn't really take that offer very seriously. I can be a control freak with certain things, and I think I'd rather just self-publish it. So that's what I did. Went through an Amazon affiliate called CreateSpace, and that's where I published my Jesus Fish book through. It's worked out well.
Did they copyright that for you, or did they clear the title of the book or give you any editor services?
They offered it, but I did my own editing. I actually went through another place first where they format your book so that it's correct for publishing, but they didn't touch any of the material, like change any of the words or any of the punctuation or anything. It was just a formatting thing. But I ended up, when I found out the royalties were better at CreateSpace, I took that PDF that they created for me, the other company, and I just uploaded it on the CreateSpace site, published it through them instead.
Stephanie and I, when we read it, we talked about it being kind of like Art and Purse's greatest hits. So can you talk about how Gary assisted you with this book?
Well, he provided a lot of material through his first two books and some of the core stuff. There might have been a couple of things I quoted directly from Secrets of the Immortal. Pretty much everything that's on there is on the first two books.
I can't remember. Did he do a foreword on that book?
Did Gary do a foreword?
Yeah.
He did.
He did.
Yeah, it was a rather amusing one, too.
Fitting the topic.
One of the things that was put into it, well, if you recall in The Disappearance of the Universe, you know, what would you do if two ascended masters show up on your on your living room couch? You know, would you call a cops? Would you call a psychiatrist? Would you order out for pizza? So in my in the foreword, he puts says something about ordering a vegan pizza. Who, you know, who calls himself Giddy Up Mikey? I'll tell you who, a guy that orders out for vegan pizza if two ascended masters showed up on his living room couch.
I can agree with that, having known you now. Since you talked about Giddy Up Mikey, can you give us a background on how you got that name?
Sure. Back in the 90s, watched a lot of Seinfeld, and this character Kramer used to occasionally say Giddy Up, and I liked that. So when I was working, I used to work for a bank back east, and I would start saying Giddy Up at work, or even signing off my emails, being unprofessional and saying Giddy Up, like signing off as Giddy Up, because some people would occasionally sign off as Cheers, and then Giddy Up was my version of Cheers. So when I moved out west, I had to create a new email address because I didn't have a personal email back then. I just had a work one. But so I had to create an email address, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go at Giddy Up Mikey. So I did that. And when I started meeting people and giving them my email address, they just started calling me Giddy Up Mikey. It wasn't like an intentional thing. I was just using an email address. I didn't mean for it to become a nickname. So that's kind of how that started. So I was like, cool. We'll go with that then. So I'm Giddy Up Mikey.
It's fun. I like it. Now, how many copies did you print on your first run? Has there been a second run?
Yeah, I think I printed like 500 copies and then went to the... I was in a rush to get it done because the Course in Miracles conference was coming up in February of... This was 2011 in San Francisco. So I wanted to make sure I had copies for the conference. So I wasn't there as a speaker. I was there as a participant, but I brought copies of my book with me. And people knew who a lot of people knew who I was, so they'd come up to me buying the book from me and stuff. Although I had already sent out a bunch of books through pre-sale, through mail. But I realized after that, there was some errors in my book, a lot of like some typos, missing words. I'm notorious for missing words. I do it on Facebook all the time, like in a mad rush, and my fingers can't keep up with my mind. And even if I go back and proofread it, it still doesn't always catch, and then I'll catch it 24 hours later. I'm like, damn it. So I go back and fix it. So I had to do a second edition of the book later that year and correct those typos and missing words and such. And my stepdad would be reading through the book. He said, Mike, this is missing and this is missing. So I had to do a third edition because there was still a few more things I had to fix. And I'm kind of anal about that stuff. I like my stuff, that sort of stuff, to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like, it was kind of like a little bit embarrassing for me, but... I got over it.
Yeah, just the ego.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. We'll get it right eventually.
Yeah.
Now, you do a bit of traveling, going to different locations, usually, I think, for Gary and Cindy workshops. What's the course community like as you travel around the world?
Well, I haven't traveled outside of North America, but I did go to Canada earlier this year to go see them in Toronto, and that was for a two-day workshop, and it was great. The people in Canada, a little bit different than America. I don't know how to describe it. It was just kind of a little bit different vibe. Maybe they're just a little more kinder and less edgy, maybe. Not to say that all Americans are like that. It just seemed slightly, it was a very subtle difference between being in Canada course people in America, course people. I didn't find that edgy vibe at all yesterday. It was a very lovely time. Although it was a small group, because I found that usually Gary workshops run anywhere from 50 to 120 people. And yesterday's was, I think, like 30 or 35 people. I was kind of surprised by that, because usually I thought Gary had some kind of rule that had a minimum amount of people, but maybe that was enough to satisfy him. I don't know. But yeah, so I try and catch him at least once a year. This year I did it twice. There was 1 year I caught him four times. 2016, look at his schedule. I see there's some stuff that appeals to me. So we'll see. I like to go meet new course people and hang out with Gary and Cindy for dinner and talk with them. And yeah, it's a good time.
One of the things we love about going to these is we meet people. And because we're still, I would say, newbies in the course world, it's nice to meet and find out their personal stories of those who attend these things. And it's kind of like all over the map. A lot of them may have been studying the course for 20 years, and some of them are just like us that just picked up the book and started reading it. So I love the fact that there's this huge range of course students that attend these things.
Yeah. Amount of time studying the course doesn't mean you understand it any better than someone who has studied it for a short period of time.
That is such a great point.
From my experience. I mean, there's been people that have been studying the course 15, 20, 25, 30 years, and they don't really get it. They have their own limited beliefs projected onto it, and they've kind of stayed stuck with that. And there's other people who I know who haven't even flipped over my course book and get it. And,
yeah.
And I don't mean to be arrogant or pat myself on the back here, but read The Disappearance in the Universe. I didn't feel a need to read the course book. In fact, I put in Jesus Fish, I didn't even read the entire text of the course book. And the only time I did was at my study group, and I was usually daydreaming or making funny faces at people during the time of the reading at the course group. So,
did you do the workbook?
I read through it, but I didn't do it as it's outlined. Because to me, the workbook is designed to get you to eventually practice true forgiveness. I was already exposed to my unconscious guilt and working on undoing it before I read The Disappearance in the Universe. I just had a very complicated way of doing it because that's the only way I knew, which I explain in Jesus Fish. But when I read The Disappearance in the Universe, it's like, man, it's about freaking time somebody put it like this. It's much simplified. And so you can take that forgiveness and just run with it. You don't necessarily need a 1,300-page course book to plow through to practice forgiveness. It's just a matter of being able to understand it and have the motivation and willingness to apply it. They say all spiritual paths lead to God, but if I tell somebody I've read The Disappearance of the Universe and just practice forgiveness, and I tell them I don't feel strongly about the course book, they say, well, I'm doing it wrong. And no, if you're practicing true forgiveness, I mean, that's the whole point of doing the course book, because to put you in that true forgiveness mindset.
Cindy Renard, in referring to you, said that you were uncompromising with the course. And I thought that was like one of the highest compliments to get. But I love the fact that you were pointing out that you didn't finish the entire text before you published your book. The reality is, we are struggling with this too. Like, do we have to be perfect? Do we have to be perfect course students and do all of our workbook lessons and all that kind of stuff? And I'm hearing that we don't.
To me, course says forgiveness is the only function meaningful in time. If you understand the metaphysics of forgiveness and apply into your life, that is the course. That's what that whole 1,300-page book is all about, is to get you into that mindset. Some people need to go through the workbook lessons because there's resistance there to get them to gently change their mind to the Holy Spirit's thought system. For me, I didn't find it necessary because I kind of went through that on my own prior to reading Gary's books. And I've actually read the entire text twice and the entire course book again since Jesus Fish came out. So I've read the book, the entire 1,300-page book twice since.
The big blue book.
Yes. But it was more of a formality for me, and just so I can say I did it, that I went through it. It didn't change my opinion about the course. Forgiveness is the only way to God.
How is Mikey's life, now that you've gone through all this and you've published a book and you understand the course, is there anything in your life that triggers you?
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes it can happen. I don't even have to leave my door sometimes. It can happen right on the internet or on Facebook or something. But I have self-control about it. I don't go into these tirades on Facebook or something. I kind of like notice it. It's like, okay, that's something to forgive. But it's usually not people. Like, I have a day job. I don't go like tour around the world or make a living off of my book. I have a day job, so I got my forgiveness lessons there too, but they're not necessarily with people. I don't really have a whole lot of forgiveness lessons with specific people. It's more about situations that come up a lot in slow burn issues, that more about circumstances, because at the end of the day, I really don't have any deep anger or grudges with anybody. Yeah, there's a few people that can annoy me from time to time, but I usually get over it really quickly.
Has this changed from before you found the course?
Yeah, because the early days of practicing forgiveness from Gary's books, I had a prior job where I had to practice specifically on this one person who I didn't particularly like. She talked to me in a way that was kind of condescending, and I had to kind of set boundaries with her and say, I had to kind of speak up. It was kind of a forgiveness lesson for me to speak up, because in some ways I can be kind of passive, and so I had to make sure I wasn't like afraid of her, so I had to make sure I could speak up to her, and I had to make myself do that a few times just to make sure. And she kept doing what she did, but I got to the point where I kept practicing forgiveness and it didn't bother me anymore. In fact, a few times I started laughing, and she kind of gave me this weird look because she expected me to give her a weird face or something. Instead, I laughed. So I knew my forgiveness lessons with this particular person were winding down, especially since they cut my job down because the company I was working for was close to bankruptcy. So they were cutting a lot of positions, and they cut me from full-time to part-time. So I was like, oh, okay, I must be making progress, because instead of being exposed to this woman 40 hours a week, now it's only 24 hours a week. So the Holy Spirit must be saying, okay, it's almost time for me to move on.
Oh, well done. That is a really good way to look at it. I have a good friend, Maya, who had a slow burn, and she would go home every night, and and just say, I forgive this person, I forgive this person. And she eventually got it, and that person was let go. So she said, as soon as I was able to get to that point where I could forgive them, they kind of exited from my life. I love that story, because there's always these slow burns, or, you know, one person or two people in our lives that are kind of like the gnat in our ear, and they just won't go away.
Well, it was kind of like that guy at the workshop, at the end of the workshop yesterday, that poor guy that whose boss was kind of like tracking where he was going for his Course in Miracles group. If he really practiced a true forgiveness, he would realize that either she would stop hounding him, or he might feel inspired to change jobs, or it might just work itself out where she moves on to another job, or just things will just naturally work out where it just stops being an issue. But you got to do the work. That's it. We can't just change our behavior alone, because the course isn't about the level of effect. It's about the level of cause. And the course specifically says you must change your mind, not your behavior. And this is a matter of willingness.
You know how the ego likes to spin us out and keep us preoccupied and keep us separated? In his case, it seemed like he was really trying hard, like he was going to Marianne Williamson. He was driving to Los Angeles, and he was going driving to another night for another thing. So in a way, that I feel like that's kind of an ego thing. Like, it keeps putting you out there, but it's not actually putting you in the right place. So him buying DU yesterday, like he never heard of it, he hadn't read it, I think is actually going to give him more value and more tools in his belt for dealing with what's going on than driving all over California going to study groups.
Yeah, study groups are kind of interesting. I went because I wanted to meet other course people. I wasn't really interested necessarily in studying with other people. I don't need people to do that. I can do that on my own, because certain people want to just pass around a course book and just read from it, and that just kind of bored the hell out of me. I'd rather just talk and talk about our experiences with the course, or even I liked when we read my Disappearance of the Universe cards. That was fun too, because it would trigger comments and shared experience. Yeah, exactly. So that was the enjoyable part. But when we were just passing around a course book and reading from the text, I'm like, I'm going to go home now and eat dessert, and I'll come back when we get to the good part of the course group. So that's how it got for me.
Did people in your study group all read DU, or were there some people who hadn't?
Most the group I was in was, Bruce had actually started it. It was a Course in Miracles / DU group. So it had that DU element to it. So I think almost everybody that participated in the group read Disappearance. It would be one or two people that come in. They were very resistant to it, but they kept showing up to the group anyway. And that was part of the reason I stopped going. You just have one or two people dominating the airtime and just going on and on about the same things. I'm like, I'm not feeling inspired to help this person. It didn't feel like there was anything I could do, and I wasn't really getting anything out of the course group anymore. It's like, okay, it's time for me to move on.
Do you have any course students or people that you can talk about in real life, not necessarily in the virtual world, where you live?
My mom and stepdad. My mom got me into spirituality with my first book, You Can Heal Your Life, Louise Hay, when I was 20 years old. I was at that time, I was learning a lot about raw foods and being vegan and stuff like that. And I was becoming quite smug and arrogant about it. I thought everyone should be doing this. I'd be preaching to people whether they wanted to hear about it or not, which was a good experience for me in the sense that I knew by the time I got to the course, I knew I didn't have to force it down people's throats. I already been through that experience, and I didn't feel inclined to put it out there for people I knew wouldn't be interested. So my mom's like, you know, you got some more learning to do here. So she tells me about the Louise Hay book, You Can Heal Your Life. And of course, I was resistant to it for some time. And I started reading it, and I got something out of it. I applied some of the stuff in there, and then she'd throw other books at me. A lot of Wayne Dyer stuff. I got heavily into him for a while. So every once in a while, she introduced me to something else, and she'd be calling me up, oh, did you read it? Did you read it? So by the time 2007 came around, someone other than my mom recommended The Disappearance of the Universe to me. And when I got into it, I would be calling up my mom. Oh, you got to read this book. You got to read this book. And then she'd finally order it. And I'd be calling up every day. Did you read it? Did you read it? So it was like our roles kind of reversed. And she got my stepdad into it. So we can just talk very openly about it all. And they get it without... My mom has a course book, but she's never touched it. But she practices true forgiveness. She gets it. Same with my stepdad. We don't mean to toot our horns, but it's that simple. It's just a matter of where you're at. Some people need that 365-day lesson workbook, and some others, from my personal experience, may not be necessary.
That's a good point. There's no recipe here. It's not like you have to do step one, step two, step three. It's whatever works for you. It's a self-study course. So you've been through this for a while. What advice would you give to people who are just coming to the course?
My advice, I never tell people to check out A Course in Miracles. I always tell them, read The Disappearance of the Universe and see how you feel about it after you do that. Maybe you want to continue with Gary's books, or maybe it'll inspire you to want to go do the workbook lessons of the course. To me, The Disappearance of the Universe is the best freaking book in the world. I mean, it was the first book I read on spirituality that made total sense to me from cover to cover and left me with no unanswered questions. And I'm on my 18th reading of it right now, because as Artin tells Gary in this, in DU, not only is repetition perfectly all right, it's mandatory.
Yes.
Because you can take in, of course, because Disappearance in the Universe is A Course in Miracles as far as I'm concerned, because they explain true forgiveness and the metaphysics behind it. And if you're practicing true forgiveness, you're doing A Course in Miracles.
I found the recurring theme with course students that have read Disappearance of the Universe is they've read it over and over and over again. Sometimes when we read a book and we think, oh, this is really great, and we tell our friends, we've only read it once. Disappearance of the Universe has such staying power. And it's so important in our lives anyway, that rereading it is sort of mandatory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think undoing the mind is really difficult. You know, I mean, in some ways it is simple, but there's so much in there from all the ancient guilt. And I'm one of the people who needs the workbook. I need the text. I'm a diehard course person, and it really gives me insight into understanding how I think. And I like that they say it's a personal relationship with you and the Holy Spirit.
Right.
And I love your book too. And I've highlighted things, and I like talking about time and collapsing time and other dimensions. And actually all that doesn't really matter when it comes down to it. Having some kind of understanding kind of helps put my head around it. And like you said, DU, from cover to cover, was the first book that finally made sense.
Yeah. And the thing too, it's like A Course in Miracles isn't the only way. The Disappearance of the Universe isn't the only way. But I like to say the Holy Spirit's thought system is the only way.
Yes.
And there are different ways of getting in touch with that Holy Spirit thought system. Even through the Bible, you could. It's a matter of how you're interpreting it and then thus applying it into your life. Because it's all about those four stages Gary talked about in the workshop yesterday, which are early on in The Disappearance of the Universe. Those four stages of duality, semi-dualism, non-dualism, and pure non-dualism. And the Holy Spirit's thought system is pure non-dualism. If you're getting in touch with that thought system, that's A Course in Miracles, that's The Disappearance of the Universe, that's the truth.
Gary mentioned yesterday in the workshop that he wondered what Jesus's life was like before he was Jesus. Stephanie and I had talked about, we had heard that the Jesus lifetime was the first person that had transcended. Do you remember where that was from?
It was in one of the books.
That was mentioned in Disappearance, yeah.
Disappearance.
J-Dog, I like to call him.
So if he was the first one to transcend, I guess the question is, what was it about him that sparked it? And as Gary mentioned yesterday, who was he before then? I find that fascinating that people had walked the earth for thousands of years and it took that long for somebody to transcend.
I can't really answer that, but I suspect that's going to be in the fourth book.
That would be fantastic.
Which, well, I probably shouldn't say anything.
Well, Gary did mention it yesterday.
Well, it sounds like it's going to come out sooner rather than later, so.
Yeah, which would be great. I know that there must be a lot of pressure on him from the community saying, where's the book? Where's the book? Why don't we have the book yet?
I think that's a good thing, because to me, if people are putting that pressure on, people are interested in that book, then that's good. That's good for Gary, so.
I think that there's some authors out there who've got like 30 books because they write a book every single year, and it's like, just let it seep in a little bit. Put some thought into it, and Gary definitely does, but he's also guided, you know, through Artin and Persa and on their time frame.
Yeah.
So what books would you recommend besides yours and Gary's?
Well, I would give a shout out to Alex's book that you both heavily enjoyed, The Universe is a Dream. I haven't read any of his other books. Actually, I probably wouldn't have read his book, but a friend had gifted it to me. So I took the time to go through it, and it was pretty neat. I mean, I had to put a lot of work into that. Not only do you have to come up with the story, but you also have to put in all the drawings. I mean, that must have been very time-consuming. And he has my kind of humor, so.
Yeah, he's great. One of the things that I find particularly not only fascinating but skillful is his ability to draw meaning. It's very hard. Like, you see cartoonists, and some of them are really good in like two cells being able to explain something complex. And here Alex is drawing basically things like the nature of time in cartoon form. I mean, that to me is astounding. So from a podcast perspective, do you, as well as us, listen to the Gary Renard podcast series?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm loaded on my iPod. I've probably listened to each one 5 or 6 times each. I'm kind of a junkie in that way. Repetition, Gary Renard junkie.
You know, it's funny. Whenever we see that it's available, we get very excited. Oh, there's a new Gary podcast. We had talked briefly with him yesterday, and I think that the cadence of these hopefully will be a little more frequent. Because right now, I think they're running a couple months apart or something like that.
I think a lot of that's dependent on Gene's health because he had some major health challenges a few years back. So I think it's kind of slowed him down in being able to put these out. So they've become a lot less frequent than they used to be in the early days of when they started doing them.
Oh, they used to do them like once a month or something?
Yeah, well, there was a couple times. I think very early they were doing them every other week. Then they became once a month. And then they've become maybe every, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 months now. Because the last one I think that's up there is came out May 31st. And I think it was recorded a month before that. So hopefully Gene gets better so people can have their Gary Renard and Gene Bogart podcast fix.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. what's next with Mike Lemieux? What is on your horizon?
What is on my horizon? I've got a couple more days here in San Diego to enjoy with my friend from Japan who's here listening. And she enjoyed being here with us at the Gary Renard Workshop, meeting him for the first time. So we're going to hang out for a couple more days, explore some more of La Jolla, and probably hit Mexico, Tijuana tomorrow, and then fly back home and go back to my day job. I just recently got a promotion at work. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I'll have some new responsibilities, but I'll have a bigger salary, so that's nice. So hopefully I can go out for maybe 2 or 3 more of Gary's workshops next year. I know he's going to be in Orange County a couple times next year, so maybe hit one of those. I know Toronto's on his schedule. I was there earlier this year, so maybe that's a possibility. But we'll see what else shows up on his schedule. I always like to go to different places. So
is Toronto the one with the young girl?
Yes.
Say something about her. I want to hear more about her.
She's adorable. She's
what's her name?
Her name's Alzena. She's a high school student. She's been a course student from Ununderstand since like the age of 8 or 9. Her family's good friends with Gary and Cindy. Yeah, it's just interesting that she's practicing forgiveness.
She can wrap her head around it.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Little jealous. I mean, we got it, I would say, a little late in the Janine and Stephanie lifetime, but how great would that have been if we had really got it at 8? We'd be just as cool.
Yeah.
So
then that's, it's funny you bring that up because some people will say, oh, I wish I'd gotten to this earlier. But to me, it's better to get into it now at the age of 50 or 60 than wait till you're 20 in your next life.
Agreed.
Or it can set you up to get it earlier in your next lifetime. So it's... Mm. We can only accept what we're ready to accept, so there's no point beating ourselves up about it.
Exactly. So is there a book in the future for you? Another book?
I am working on a second book. I've got most of the hard stuff done. I have a whole chapter dedicated to my time spent in Catholic school. I have some stories in there where you can't make this stuff up. And same with my Navy story. I have a chapter on my time spent in the Navy. In fact, this is my first time in San Diego since I was in the Navy 2015, so 22, 23 years ago. So this is my first time there. So
are those memories flooding back?
No, because I'm seeing parts of San Diego I didn't see when I was here because I didn't have a vehicle then. So my view of San Diego was limited, and I was mostly on the base. Anyway. Oh, yeah. So second book. I am working on that. Don't know when it will be ready. Writing is like cleaning for me. It's like I have resistance to doing it. When you eventually motivate yourself enough to do it and you get it done, you're glad you did it. I want to do the second book and I don't want to write ever again. That's how I feel. When I did the first book, I knew I wanted to do a second book because I had more to say. But after the second book, I don't feel like I have anything more to say. Maybe 20 or 30 years from now, it might change because I'll have different experiences to share maybe. But I don't know. I just want to get the second book done, but it's probably going to be some time before it's ready.
For those of us who love listening to audiobooks, is there any plans for Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish on audio?
There's no plans at this time, but I'm open to definitely getting that done in some way. I remember there's actually a recording studio in Ashland where I live, quite pricey, so I was like, I better hold off on that for now. So that would be wonderful because I know not everyone likes to read, and people like you and Stephanie are in cars for a good period of time and just want something to listen to. So That would be lovely to have.
Well, if the Course of Course is ever in Ashland, we're more than happy to record your book for you.
Awesome. I'm down.
See, we took care of that, listeners. It's all done. All right, Mikey, thank you so much for being in our podcast studio. It's been a pleasure spending time with you, both yesterday at the Gary and Cindy Renard Workshop and here in our podcast studio.
And buy his book. You can get it on Amazon, or you can buy a hard copy if you want, like we did.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me, ladies. It was nice meeting you, and thank you for having me for the podcast. So, giddy up.
All right, listeners, we will return in a few weeks with A Course of Course episode 34. Can't wait. See you later.
Bye.